everybody. Welcome to the Movement for a People's Party's National Call, February 18th, 2021. My name is Phil Atteto. I'm in Annapolis, Maryland. I'm going to do a quick agenda review. Hope everybody's doing well, especially our friends that are getting hit with the snow and the polar vortex and the inclement weather. Thanks everybody for joining. So if you want to put your name and city in the chat so we can get an idea where everybody's from and kind of where everybody's spread out and located. And then after a while, we'll probably close it down because we've had some issues with it, but we will have the Q&A open for questions. So at the bottom of your screen, if you click on Q&A and enter any questions you have there, we'll get to them towards the end of the call. So we're going to start it off with some updates from Nick. And then we're going to get a little bit more of a specific update from our friend Brennan, who has family and lives in Texas. Then Todd's going to go over some organizing and action updates. Then we're going to get to our local featured speakers. We'll have some friends from Ohio and hopefully Wisconsin, as well as some people from our animal rights circle. Then Michelle's going to give us some updates on hub building and our efforts there. Then a little bit about the advisory council update on that from Nick. Then we'll close out with our Q&A per usual and have a little closing. So with that, I will hand it over to Nick and for a bit of an update on what's going on. What's the good word, Nick?
All right, Phil. Thanks. Thanks for that intro. And thanks to everyone. Good to see everyone who is joining. I wanted to tonight, you know, in particular, talk about what is happening in Texas. We've got the humanitarian crisis in Texas, and also share the results of our vote to endorse unionization in Amazon and the first Amazon warehouse in the United States. You know, and so to start off, what's happening right now in Texas is really really incredible. We've seen this week millions of Texans who are freezing in their homes in the wake of a winter storm that knocked out the state's deregulated and defunded power grid, despite the fact that there were warnings up to a decade ago that this is exactly what would happen the next time that Texas faced the kind of big freeze like it did now. And the kinds of stories that are coming out of Texas really resemble the kinds of catastrophic infrastructure failures that you would expect to hear in the wake of a natural disaster in a country that has just endured a civil war or in a very poor developing nation. I mean, you have people who, after days of not having power, who in their homes, not being able to, including throughout night in sub-zero temperatures, and you have refrigerated food has spoiled at this point for people, millions of people. You have water mains that are bursting. It's causing a cascade of other failures in Texas. You have sewage systems that are breaking, and even where they're working in some areas, local governments are urging citizens not to use it because the systems are so fragile and have failed. You have grocery stores that are bare because food supply chains are collapsing. And so this is really kind of like an apocalyptic scene in some places in Texas. You've got hospitals. Hospitals are using bags for rainwater, to collect rainwater for toilets. And they're using bags as well for the toilets themselves. Local authorities are commissioning refrigerated trucks to be available in the city at night to pick up frozen bodies. This is the richest country in the world where this is happening. In blackout-stricken suburbs of Houston, families are sleeping in their cars and they're turning on grills inside. They're keeping their cars running inside inside garages, in an effort to keep their homes warm, in an effort to keep themselves warm. And that's resulted in a huge spike in cases of carbon monoxide poisoning. People found dead in their homes as a result of carbon monoxide from vehicle exhaust. And in Houston, families are burning furniture and fencing to keep warm in the glow of a fully lit Houston skyline of corporate empty skyscrapers, people freezing down below. This is like something out of the Hunger Games or a poor developing nation hit by a war and a catastrophe. The state's Republican leadership has responded by blaming the outages on frozen windmills, which resulted in them getting made fun of course, throughout the internet by the fact that windmills, wind power can operate in sub-zero temperatures, including in the Arctic and Antarctic. In reality, Texas gets the large majority, more than 80% of its power from natural gas and coal. And those are the sources that are failing. Texas also, to escape national regulation, cut off its power supply, its state power supply from other states, resulting in it not having a backup source of power. And now we see the results of having done that, where other states, neighboring states also hit by the same storm, are weathering it much better. Their citizens have power, they have water, they have food. Ted Cruz, probably determined to be the worst, flew off to Cancun in the midst of a crisis and promptly returned when that was publicized. This is a country in the United States where it's had the worst response to the pandemic in the developed world. 4% of the world's population, but a quarter of the coronavirus cases and deaths. Tens of millions of people who were already living paycheck to paycheck without savings have now found themselves out of a job in healthcare. Tens of millions more don't have enough food to eat and face eviction and foreclosure at the moment that moratoriums are lifted. The corporate parties are completely incapable of handling a crisis. They're completely incapable of governing anymore. They only have one move: exploit crisis after crisis, which compounds because of their actions, to transfer more wealth to Wall Street. Every crisis is a new opportunity to siphon more wealth from the working class to Wall Street. So while millions of people are suffering in Texas and across the country, billionaires and CEOs have added more than $1 trillion to their already obscene fortunes over the last year in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic and the depression and the escalating natural disasters across the country. And they've taken that wealth from working people at a time when they needed it most. So we're going to share, I'm going to put right now, mutual aid resources into the chat for everyone. There is help for you and your family if you're in Texas. It's not coming from the government. It's coming from citizens who have organized themselves into mutual aid networks to provide food, warmth, shelter to those who need it most. Y para todos que lo necesitan en español, lo pueden encontrar aquí también. There's help for you. But this is no way to live, depending on mutual aid networks. That's what mutual aid is what the government is supposed to do. That's why we pay taxes. That's why we organize into governments in the first place. But this government has become a failed state, and it can no longer provide for its people. And we're seeing that now in compounding crisis after crisis after crisis. And that's why that probably has something to do with the fact that now a new poll came out from Gallup this week showing that the largest record all-time high majority of Americans want a major new party. 62% of Americans, almost two-thirds, only 33% opposed. And satisfaction with the direction of the country is about 10%. And this poll for a new party was taken after Biden was inaugurated. At the same time, the number of independents, more than half the country is now independent. More than half the country. And that's the kind of imperative that we have. Because the country is breaking down and it's falling apart all around us. And to prevent that to become from becoming a further breeding ground from fascism and racism and hatred than it already has, we have to build and offer an alternative vision. And that's what we're doing with the People's Party. I'm going to hand it over now to Brennan, who's in Texas and whose family has been victims of the crisis over there and has friends very much who are also experiencing the crisis.
Thanks, Nick. And thank you so much for sharing that document with the mutual aid funds. I agree that it is just disgusting that we are having to organize in a way that our government is not. On the plus side, it is very heartwarming to know that our communities can organize quickly and can take care of one another. So yeah, just to add a little more context as to what's going on, I can speak primarily for the Austin area where I'm a resident, where my mother lives, where, you know, my community is. I will say that fortunately, I've been out of town on a work trip, so I haven't had to experience most of this myself, other than, you know, speaking on the phone with my mom most of the day, making sure that she's all right. And I would love to be the bearer of good news to say that it's not as bad as you've been reading about, but the reality is that it's just as bad, if not worse. Conditions are horrible. It's freezing outside. The past few days, it's been colder in Texas than it is in Anchorage, Alaska. Many, and by many, I mean the majority of homes are without power in the Austin area. Pipes are frozen. So my mom and many, many others are having to boil the snow outside to drink, to use the restroom. Many are getting sick as a result because the snow is contaminated because you can only have fresh snow for so long. The city doesn't have any resources for clearing the roads. So everyone is, you know, if you live even a couple miles away from a walkable community, you're pretty much entirely isolated. As for friends, you know, my age and their mid-20s who live in the city, many of them are moving their beds into the living room so they can keep warm at night, putting trash bags on the windows to help insulate their apartments that, again, are without electricity, without running water, many without heat as well. And amidst all of this, we're seeing price gouging from corporations. We're seeing the electricity, like Nick said, the deregulated power grids charge thousands times what they normally charge for power, knowing that they can profit off of this crisis, knowing that they can profit off of suffering. And so I think the main point I want to make here is that this is obviously a climate catastrophe. We rarely get snow in Texas. We might get like an inch and a half in Austin every 3 years or so. We already had a few inches in January, and now we've got, you know, roughly 6 to 8 inches over the past week. So obviously this is a climate catastrophe. The climate disasters are here. They're not coming in the future. They're here already, as we've seen over the past year with all the fires all over the world. And now, you know, this unprecedented polar vortex. But the other point is that it's not just a climate problem. We are seeing the results of capitalism and the results of a ruling class providing for themselves before providing for the majority of people. And like Nick said, you look downtown and there's these empty corporate buildings that are completely lit up while most people are freezing inside without power. And it's mainly working class and Black and brown communities that are without power. And it's just a precursor for what we can expect down the line unless we organize now. Because it's not like this is, you know, this might be the worst that we've seen so far, but it's also the best of what's to come because it's only getting worse unless we organize now. So I'm happy to answer any questions down the line or if anyone wants to reach out about what's going on in Texas I again just want to reiterate a thank you to Nick. Those mutual aid funds are very helpful. Again, it is heartwarming to see that when we are not being taken care of by our leadership, by our government, that at least we can take care of the people around us. Sorry, right. I need to pass it off to someone, huh?
No, it's okay. I think I'm going to take it over from you, Brennan. Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Amazon vote that we took. Nick alluded to it a little bit, but it was nearly unanimous in favor of supporting the Amazon workers. So yes, go everybody in Amazon. Keep fighting the boss, and we're going to support you on Saturday. There is, let's see, a whole bunch of actions across the country that we are now encouraging people to go to as part of this. Thank you, Phil, for dropping that in. There are actions in pretty much, well, a lot of states out there, and see if there's one in your neck of the woods. If there isn't, you could probably start one last minute. There's a place there to start. You could probably get some people in for over the next couple of days. And yeah, support the workers at Amazon who are trying to have a voice in their workplace. And they're doing so because we are down at the bottom with Syria and Russia as far as labor laws. And yeah, sorry, I'm getting on a bit of a soapbox here, but you know, we as American citizens have more rights walking down the street than we do at our jobs. And that is why people form unions, to actually move over some of those base protections into that and be able to really take ownership of that, and to be able to, you know, solve their own problems at work. All right, next in news, I'm going to talk about the Ohio kickoff. So this week, Ohio, of which I'm a resident of, live in Cleveland, yay, was the fourth state to kick off our transition to the People's Party. So in Ohio, the process is basically we have to get about 60,000 signatures, which in Ohio means more like 120, because they love to throw those out. Gotta love it. And yeah, we started that process. We're going to be doing that before July of next year. And it's going to be great. A lot of chance to, you know, meet people in the state and to really start this party and to build what we're doing there in the Buckeye State. And tonight joining us is Carla Welch. She's another volunteer in Ohio, whereas I'm in the city. She's kind of in the country, as you know, the tale of two places, as most of our states are. So she's going to give you her perspective as to why the People's Party is a good idea for Ohio and the rest of the country. You want to take it over, Carla?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
I don't know if you can see me. I'm sorry.
We can.
Okay, I'm on my phone. My name is Carla Welch. I live in a very small, rural, poor community. And I think that we need the People's Party because the Democrats, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are fighting for the poor people. So that's like my community. And I think that people need to be more educated about what's going on so that they know that when they're voting for Democrats or Republicans, they're likely voting against their own interests. As far as larger communities, I think it's important because there are, especially places like Dayton, Cleveland, where Todd's from, there are a lot more people of color. And I think that people of color have been forgotten. And I think that the Democrats take them for granted. And so I think that we need a third party, the People's Party, just so that we have another option. You know, I don't want to vote for the lesser of two evils anymore. Thank you. And back to you, Todd.
Well said, Carla. Yeah, that's exactly why we're building this major new party in Ohio. And it's going to be fun talking to everybody in the state because, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that know that no one is fighting for them. And we're going to bring them into the fight with us and empower them to turn that state over to something better. All right. So in other MPP news, we have a lot of different circles popping up especially in political outreach, almost daily now. And one of the newer circles that we have is the animal rights circle. And we've got a couple speakers here tonight to talk about that. And I want to pass it over to Vita Strom and Pranav Merchant.
Hi. I have been an animal rights vegan activist for over 32 years, and I've been a left-wing political junkie longer than that. So I have my two passions colliding, and it's just amazing. And even better, we just started our circle. We had our first meeting on Tuesday. So to have a group of people who are with similar commitments is just really profoundly wonderful for me. We're not sure yet what we're going to work on, but maybe we can create projects that might to see what could have the greatest impact on the most number of animals. We really want to work, maybe we'll work on like having real life structures and, you know, provide ways for more people, to live their life, providing compassion and justice and civility to all animals, as People's Party is committed to those things for humans. We really want to bring other animal individuals, animal and vegan organizations and individuals into the People's Party. I think the more passionate committed people we have in the party will just draw more people who have those particular commitments. And then we can really all get together on really creating a better world for all of us. I have a quote that I just love. It's, our greatest joy comes in helping others and blessing them. And we hurt ourselves the most when we harm others for our own gain. And I just encourage anyone who's an animal rights activist who loves animals to be a part of our circle. And someone smarter than me will have to tell you how to do that. But I want to thank you so much for this amazing opportunity. And also for all of you, everything you've done and are doing and will do for MPP and eventually the People's Party. I just can't believe it's the cream of the crop of humanity. And I'm just so privileged to know you. So I'm going to pass it on now to Pranav.
Thanks, Vita. Thanks. Hi, everybody. My name is Pranav Merchant. I currently live in Kihei in Hawaii. And just my quick background about how I learned about why I joined MPP is having been sort of a political junkie myself, I was excited to see a party that was so openly and unapologetically critical of both mainstream parties. I didn't join expecting to find the party open to sort of animal rights issues. So when I learned about the animal rights circle, I was quite, you know, genuinely impressed that that's, in my mind, this was truly a people's party and a progressive party that was open to addressing issues that maybe many of its members haven't even considered up to this point. So genuine sort of compliment to the party and its leadership for incorporating the animal rights circle. You know, Vita touched upon some of the goals and sort of ambitions we sort of have in our sort of tiny circle. I just want to add to that my personal goal, and I'm sure others will feel this way, is that what we hope to do as a part of the animal rights circle is increase awareness of animal rights issues, both within the party and hopefully as the movement for a People Party continues to grow in the mainstream as well. And you know, neither the Democrats and obviously not the Republicans, neither party has really staked a position on animal issues. Hopefully movement for People's Party can sort of be a leader in that. And you know, hope, you know, we can contribute to that a little bit. And I also want to add that Vita mentioned, you know, veganism and plant-based eating. You know, we have in the group, we tend to skew that way, but we really are open to and want anyone and everyone who sort of cares about animals, has seen some of the news stories and investigations about what happens to animals and factory farms or labs or, you know, circuses or in any of the places or venues animals are used. For people who care about that, to feel free to join us and contribute their thoughts and opinions wherever they stand. It's just to finish it, it's open to everybody. And the idea is just to make a better world for animals. So if you're interested, please reach out to Vita or myself or anyone, and they'll put you in contact with us. And we'd love to have everyone interested on board. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, both of you. And I did drop a couple links into the chat. If you want to join either the Animal Rights Circle or any other circles or any other working groups, please sign up at the volunteer link there. And if you want to sign the petition to get us in the ballot in Ohio or in other states, really any state, even if you haven't started yet, that second link there, the peoplesparty.org/organize/state-petition is what you want to do there. And we will contact you and figure out how to get your signature on paper if that need be. All right. And I think now I'm going to pass it over to Michelle.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate that. And then I'd also like to mention, you know, and thanks to our speakers that we've had so far. That's always awesome to hear from different parts of what we're building here, all the different circles and different hubs and so many different folks working in different ways. I just wanted to mention, in addition to what Todd mentioned, of course, signing up to volunteer on the website, peoplesparty.org. Is awesome first step to get involved. And then we also have some surveys coming out that usually about 2 days after folks sign up to volunteer, you get a survey. And there are places on there, you know, there's some different questions that ask you. And if you indicate that, like, for example, with this particular circle that we heard from Vita and Pranav about today, animal rights for a People's Party. For example, you know, you can indicate on that survey that animal rights are important to you. And then that you can get that information to that circle. That's another way to get connected that way as well. With the surveys can kind of help give us an idea what things you might be interested in. Another great way to find out what you, you know, which ways you think you might be interested in helping build the movement, of course, would be joining one of our welcome and onboarding calls that we have every Sunday, where we talk about all the different, you know, circles, the 7 major working groups that we have here, the history of MPP, you know, how we kind of started out, you know, where we are now, where we're headed toward as we're in this moment of transitioning to the actual, you know, party structures and building up our hubs and state parties in all the different states. We have different levels of growth in different places. And so there are some places like Ohio, you know, just getting moving on the actual party formation part, you know, with the petition and places like, you know, in Maine and in California, where folks can start registering as People's Party. And then also in Colorado, where they're also doing a petition and many other states to follow, you know, with those kind of things. But in other states, we also have folks who are starting to organize and work on different, you know, events or different, you know, working with coalition, you know, to build coalition with other local groups. And obviously with all the things going on, there's also a lot of mutual aid opportunities to work with different local mutual aid efforts, lots of different ways of plugging in and so many different roles that people can perform within that, but that's definitely our largest need is for folks to be really helping out with building up our organizing efforts in each state as we go to form the party. We'll also be at a point when each, you know, we have sort of a plan of action, we'll say, you know, sort of an order of states to get things moving as far as eventually each state will start, you know, forming like an organizing committee, that kind of thing. But it's kind of a stepped process, but everywhere the first step is always, you know, getting a small group of folks together, at least initially, who could be kind of a core team of folks to start organizing within a particular state, and then building from there. So, and then there's also, you know, obviously the working groups and the circles also are other important ways to plug in and help build this movement. So, lots of different ways. That's something that we definitely do talk about on those welcome and onboarding calls. So I'm going to put a link in the chat really quick about those welcome and onboarding calls every Sunday. They're at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. And so this is on our website. You can go to this section here where it says welcome call when you go to that part on the website, and then you can pick which Sunday you'd like to attend one of those. So, and then we'll help you figure out which area you might be interested in getting involved in. So obviously, you know, we're going to be building in all the states, as I mentioned, and wanting to work on, you know, forming the actual party structure, getting on the ballot. And that takes a lot of people. So it takes a lot of people to do that. We have had a huge surge in folks signing up to volunteer, particularly in the last year and already in this new year. So we have also folks who are working on reaching out to volunteers as folks are signing up. If someone hasn't gotten back to you just yet, just know that in some areas there's been quite a few people signing up. And so we're working on reaching out to everyone. So, but the surveys help as well, what I mentioned earlier, just to kind of help understand where people's strengths are and interests are and things like that. So that's kind of the recent update on what's going on with organizing and hub building and our recent efforts there. So I'm going to pass it over now to Nick to give us some more updates on some important things. So Nick, do you want to take it over?
Thank you, Michelle. Yeah, and as Michelle says, you know, we really need everyone in the states helping us kick off the processes in different states, register in more states. We're now in 4 with Maine, Colorado, California, and Ohio. And we're of course bringing the People's Party nationwide, but we need your help to be able to do that. And we're seeing, you know, with each day how urgent this is. And so I wanted to update, speaking about that, something that happened just in the last couple of days. And that is that the Biden administration, which ran on forgiving $10,000 of student loans, is picking up on its familiar pattern of backing away from all of the promises that it made during the campaign, which were already insufficient, you know, because we should have had the level of promises that Bernie Sanders made. But not even with the task forces, the unity task forces or anything, did he commit to any of that. And so we got things like, for example, 10,000 that he said that he was gonna forgive. Well, now it turns out that his position is evolving in real time, where on Tuesday, the White House said that low student loan forgiveness might be actually more modest than 10,000. And then on Wednesday, they said that it might not happen at all. And they said that they doubt whether that he has the authority to do it by executive action, which is ridiculous. He does, it's well established. And so even the 10,000, they wanted to pass through Congress. And so they wanna do it in a way in which they know it isn't gonna happen essentially. And so he also suggested at this town hall that that his opposition was rooted in the idea that student loan forgiveness would benefit even wealthier students who went to elite colleges and more expensive private universities. You know, so this is like the same means testing argument that is used essentially for everything. You know, used against providing free public college when Hillary Clinton said in response to Bernie Sanders' free public college proposal in 2016 that instead, you know, no, we only needed to provide it to families who make under $125,000. You know, this argument is whipped out to prevent essentially the creation of universal programs in the United States. And it's why we don't have things like universal coverage of healthcare, or human right, education guaranteed as a human right, higher education, or universal pre-K, or universal paid sick leave. I mean, these are things that are markedly missing in the United States compared to the rest of the developed world. And it also reflects a pattern in the Biden administration of making this promise, which was already insufficient, and then backing away from it. We've seen it with the $2,000 checks going to $1,400 immediately. You're going to get immediate $2,000 check. Now it's, you know, $1,400 in March, maybe. And that's before negotiating with the Republicans. So they're saying it's going to be even less. The $1.9 trillion stimulus, that's going to be less as well. Of course, their overriding obsession and focus was only impeachment, you know, and they couldn't provide any help for people during that time. Apparently, they can't multitask. And that's going to become less, the $1.9 trillion stimulus, because they negotiated a power sharing agreement in the Senate as well, even though they, the fact despite the fact that they have the majority because they have the tie-breaking vote, Kamala Harris. And it reflects what's happening when it comes to healthcare. The Biden administration promised a public option in lowering the age of Medicare eligibility to 60. What are we seeing now? That they're backing away from those promises and instead offering up as a part of their COVID relief plan, a plan that was literally written by the insurance industry and is multi-billion-dollar giveaway to the insurance industry of just bolstering ACA subsidies. The same thing is happening across the board with the Biden administration. And it's just kind of amazing that there were some progressives out there who thought, you know, maybe we're going to get an FDR presidency out of Biden. Well, if his campaign positions weren't enough and his corporate nominees stacking his administration with corporate cabinet secretaries and his transition team, if that wasn't enough and this isn't enough, then I don't think it will ever be clear to anyone who can't see at this point that the Biden administration is no progressive administration and it will be no progressive administration. This is a 50-year servant of Wall Street, former segregationist, architect of the big crash of deregulating Wall Street, architect during the Clinton years of many of the trade deals, architect of the racist policing policies and mass incarceration in the United States. Biden is not going to have any epiphanies now in office. I also wanted to build a little bit on what Todd had shared by giving some more details on the National Day of Solidarity that is happening on Saturday with the Amazon workers that we are endorsing and supporting. And so supportamazonworkers.org, February 20th. This is where you can find the details of the different actions that are taking place. There are more than 40 across the country. I'm going to one in Baltimore, and I encourage everyone to find the one that is nearest to you and go and support as members of the People's Party and show our solidarity with the Amazon workers who are fighting this historic campaign to unionize what would be the first warehouse union in the United States in Amazon. And so that would be a historic development. And it's happening in a right to work state that is against historically racist and oppositional policies to labor organizing across the South. And that is truly remarkable, but it stands a great chance of passing. And so as much as we can show our solidarity, please do. And then lastly, I wanted to share with everyone that we heard from a number of our members that they would be interested in ratifying advisory council members and also in ratifying the advisory council as it is. And so we have heard all of you guys who were interested in doing that. And that is exactly what we're going to be doing over the next week. We are going to be putting up our existing advisory council up for ratification by our membership. And so we have, of course, incredible individuals like Chris Smalls, including labor organizers, Chris Smalls, who was down in Alabama just recently, organizing for the union there, the Amazon Union, Omar Fernandez, Dr. Cornel West, Susan Sarandon, and an incredible array of remarkable people on our advisory council. And we'll be putting that group up for a ratification vote by everyone so that everyone has an opportunity as our membership to verify, in fact, that that is what we want. The advisory council, of course, serves the purpose of advising the movement of advising the national coordinators and also helping to reach out to their networks and bring in new allies and help us form partnerships with different groups that we might not otherwise be able to contact or connect with. And likewise, we are putting up every single additional member who joins our advisory council up for a ratification vote. And there are some exciting people who are very interested and I think who you will be excited to see and to evaluate as potential new members of the advisory council. And so I think with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Phil and see if we have any questions.
Great, yeah, we have a few questions. I think the first one Todd wanted to answer if you're ready.
Oh, I was just holding it for Nick, but.
Gotcha. Yeah, so just asking, what do you know about the Progressive Party Builders and are we involved? And, you know, is that a competitor?
Progressive Party Builders. As far as I know, there are a number of different groups called the Progressive Party. So I'm not aware which one you're talking about here, but we do welcome working with other organizations like it who are also fighting for independent power and certainly welcome working with any elected officials that we can all put into office and collaborate. The United States needs more than one independent party. It needs to become a multi-party system with many different parties, as we see, as is typical in most of the developed world. Again, talking about how the United States is an aberration time and time again, the US has this first past the post electoral system, which makes it particularly hard to build independent parties and to have a multi-party system. And so we have this two-party corporate system because the two parties are a whole heck of a lot easier to bribe than if you have six or that kind of thing. I'll hand it back to you, Phil, unless there's any kind of more clarification on that.
All right. Someone just asking about if we're, you know, what kind of noise we're making about everything going on in Texas with any like social media or podcast.
So in Texas, yes, we are sharing tomorrow. We just shared tonight mutual aid resources. And we're going to be doing that a lot more with our members tomorrow and also on social media. Helping to connect people to the centers of food or shelter and warmth that people can use to get through this crisis as power is being restored. A significant amount of power was restored last night, but there are still about 500,000 families at least, people who are out in the cold, still don't have power in Texas. And amazingly, the power grid, it was revealed just a couple days ago that the power grid was seconds or minutes from a catastrophic failure that would have taken it down for months without power. You can just imagine the level of catastrophe that would have been. This is bad enough. And so we're sharing those mutual aid resources and we will be showing all of our members how they can more directly get involved in helping people over email and social media tomorrow.
Great, excellent. So just had a couple questions and suggestions on new advisory council members. So are we going to open that up for suggestions from our membership or have some sort of process?
Oh yeah, let's hear them.
Let's see, Ralph Nader, Aaron Brockovich, and Danny Scherson, S-J-U-R-E-S-E-N. Sorry if I mispronounced that. And Chris Hedges.
Some great ideas there. If others have ideas, send them in the Q&A now. so that others can so that others can hear.
Excellent. Then just a few questions if we're going to support specific legislation like Ayanna Pressley's federal jobs guarantee proposal or the Green New Deal.
We might be, but some of those policies, are great. Other ones, you know, don't go as far as we do. So it's really kind of on an individual basis. The Green New Deal resolution, for example, we support an even stronger version of the Green New Deal.
I just wanted to throw in for, I think, our friends watching the live stream, either on YouTube or Facebook, Richard Wolff is being thrown as a suggestion a lot for our advisory council. So just want to make sure that was acknowledged.
Richard Wolff. Richard yes. Wolff has been on a media tour recently on independent media, both on Breonna Joy Gray, Bad Faith, The Jimmy Dore Show, really talking about how we need an independent party recently. And so he could make a fantastic member.
Let's see. I think that's most of them. Someone else suggested Trap House for advisory council, or Alicia Garza, William Barber from the Poor People's Campaign.
Our national partners. We're national mm-hmm. partners with the Poor People's Campaign.
Yep. Mark Blythe, Stephanie Kelton, William Gibson. So getting a lot of them. Killer Mike. Now they're all coming in. For T-Child, yeah. Now they're all rolling in. But Thomas Frank. So yeah, it looks like that's everything we have for questions. We actually got through them all for once. So did we have somebody with a good closing? That's the question.
Well, unless anyone else has a closing. Oh, I do see a hand raised. So I don't know if you have a question, you know, let's see. I don't know if we have any more in the Q&A. Looks like we got through. Yeah, looks like we got through those. But if there's a kind of a last. There is Shama Sawant was also Diane Radovich. I just see a couple more added in there. That might be what the hand raise was. But anyway, I was just going to say for a closing, I don't have a particular prepared, you know, poem or quote or anything like that. But I guess I just thought in closing, I would just like to say that I think what we really need right now, especially in this time where things are very difficult for a lot of people, a lot of people are really going through a lot of different struggles in a lot of different ways. And, you know, as we're building this movement, I guess I would just say in closing that solidarity is something that I think we're in great need of. And we're not always going to agree on every single point with all the different kind of changes we all want to see. Largely, I think we're in agreement on the great number of things. You know, the country, when you look at those issue polls, are in agreement on a lot of things, you know, like a single payer healthcare system or Medicare for all type system. You know, 80% or so, depending on which issue poll you look at, over 50% even of Republicans, you know, wanting something like that. Money out of politics, you know, 90% of the country wants to see a change like that. You know, when you go down the line of all these different types of changes, we have great agreement, but there's also many different things we might not agree 100% on, and that's okay. We're not really asking folks to come together in this movement and be able to agree 100% of the time on every single issue. But we're asking you to come together and try to make change together so that we can actually try to make a good faith effort at building a major new party that actually will actually be going toward that goal rather than trying to listen to the lobbyists and the, you know, the moneyed interests who are being represented right now. So we really need something that the people are represented in that is going to look like a lot of different people plugging in a lot of different ways and being able to share those ideas and those thoughts on what that might look like as far as different legislation and different issues that we all find important. And some of us, again, maybe in slightly different ways or different phrasing, or maybe some of us go a little further in one way or another, or self-identify on one particular label, but to my personal humble opinion, if we can avoid some of the labels and focus more on the issues and the ones that we agree on in particular, and just agree to at least come together and have a conversation about the ones that we maybe don't all see the same way. So that's kind of my my closing, is just asking for folks to work together in solidarity and good faith, and that's what I wanted to say. So I'll pass it back to you, Phil.
Nice. So I just wanted to add on to what you said about not needing to agree on everything. You know, there's a saying that if everybody in your coalition agrees on everything, then your coalition is too small. So, and just also wanted to point out that, yeah, we got flooded with all these different suggestions for the advisory council. If you could please email them to us at organize@peoplesparty.org so that we can start compiling a list and figuring out how to implement that. And we do have a few minutes left, and I see Marjorie and Theo raised their hands perhaps with the closing. So I wanted to maybe open it up to them to see what their closing was. So Marjorie, if you're still there, you're unmuted. Or you're, here you go. Or maybe you didn't have a closing. Just raising your hand for a question. So
Theo, if,
yeah. Hey, yeah, Marjorie, if you're trying to talk, you're muted. There you go. If you're talking, we can't hear you, unfortunately. You are unmuted, though. So I'll go ahead and if you come on, Marjorie, please let us know. So I'll go along to our friend Theo, see if you had a closing. Go ahead, Theo.
Yo. Oh, wow. Hello, friends. We learned at Standing Rock that we have to defend the sacred, and that all life is sacred, water is sacred. And it was really an honor to hear from the animal rights activists on the call tonight. It feels really rich that we're gonna start including animal rights in our thinking, because we need to make a world that's less cruel. It's a really a cruel, awful world we're inheriting, but we can do better. And so we know that the civil rights movement grew from a spiritual energy, and they sang together at night and they kept focused and they won their victories. And we know that we came out of the Bernie Sanders movement, and that was a civil rightsy feel, you know, loose and weird and hairy, but also uplifted and dedicated. And, you know, no one was photocopying their butts on the photocopying machine, you know, not because they couldn't, but because they were, you know, they're working for a cause, you know? So which is to say, we are that vibe. We are a civil rights movement. We are fighting for justice. We are fighting against war and corruption, and we need to win. So we invite the blessings. So maybe just at this moment, as we close, I'd like you all to maybe offer this work to the divine as you see it, the highest understanding of your own experience, and offer this work to healing the planet to the divine, and invite the blessings of the higher power on our work.
All set.
Amen, Theo.
Thank you for that. And thank you everybody for joining and for being a part of this movement. We're going to do it together. As Theo, you know, kind of said, we're going to build the world that we envision, the world that we need through this party. At least that's my hope. So
that's right.
Everybody stay safe and take care of one another, and we'll talk soon. See you next time.
Take care, all. Take care of yourselves, of Texas, the unionizing workers in Amazon, and see you soon.
Good night. Night. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Night, all.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks again to our speakers. Thanks, Theo.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, everybody. Love you.